It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Today's Farm to Table Talk, we're in Vermont, and we're talking to Dave Chapman. Dave is a farmer. He's a farmer that's an organic farmer. He's got a lot of, I think, good perspectives on the industry, and he's involved in a special project we're going to have him tell him about. Dave, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you, Roger.
So, Dave, describe where you are. If everybody listening was able to be at your farm right now, what's it look like?
We live in a beautiful part of the world. I'm looking out across some fields at the Connecticut River, and beyond that, I'm seeing New Hampshire. It's very green, finally, after a long, slow winter and a reluctant spring. So we're now in full Vermont lush green mode. Beautiful rolling hills around, yeah. And then over to my right, there's a glass greenhouse, which is where we grow our tomatoes.
Now, do you grow anything other than tomatoes now?
Not for sale. We grow different kinds of tomatoes, but everything that we grow that we sell is a tomato. We used to be a very mixed farm, with lots of different vegetables and flowers and fruits, but we got a lot simpler, I don't know, 25 years ago, when I started having kids and life got a little bit too complicated, and I needed to simplify the farming a bit in order to see the kids once in a while. So we moved from being a retail farm stand to really becoming a farm that wholesaled tomatoes.
Now, are you certified organic?
Yes, we're certified right now with the USDA, and before that, before USDA got involved, we were certified with the Vermont Organic Farmers.
Now, that kind of brings us to an issue that you've gotten involved with. And in fact, you mentioned that you're in a greenhouse, and the thing in your greenhouse, the tomatoes are in soil. They're grown in soil. Would you explain to the listeners what the alternative is to growing the vegetables in soil in a greenhouse?
Sure. Well, most of the vegetables that are grown in greenhouses in the world are grown hydroponically, and many thousands of acres of hydroponic tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, lettuce are grown around the world. Just conventional. This would be not considered organic. And what that means is that that the nutrition for the plants is provided through the liquid irrigation. It's provided as a liquid feed, so it's very plant available, and it's sort of the epitome of conventional chemical farming, where they've really completely dispensed with soil, and they're making their feed. You know, they're chemists, and they've got it pretty well worked out, and they get very high levels of production, very high yields per acre. And this transformation actually, Roger, happened in our lifetime. I know Dutch growers who can remember when they were kids working in greenhouses, and back then everybody grew in the soil, whether they were conventional or organic. Then there came a transition where the growers realized they got higher yields with hydroponics, and that's how they went. And sometimes the hydroponic production, the plant is growing in a bag of rock wool, which is like a fiberglass insulation, or cocoa coir, which is a shredded coconut husk. They don't really care. I mean, they have different qualities for aeration and whatnot, but what they want is what's something that is not going to break down too easily. They wouldn't do it in a bag of compost, because it would actually rot. It would break down, and they want something that's pretty recalcitrant. So those are the two main substrates. And then, of course, some hydroponic people just grow in a tube of water, and the nutrient feed just runs over the roots. But and that happens more for lettuce, but for things like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, cucumbers, they will have them growing in a bag of something.
Can you taste a difference, Dave?
I can, yes. I think you can. I don't think there's much doubt that if you compared our tomatoes to a hydroponic tomato, I think that the difference would be pretty obvious to everybody.
So they can taste the soil.
Yeah, so it's okay. So this is where things get really interesting. And until 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, all of the organic production was in the soil. And which, of course, only makes sense because that's what organic farming is about, tending the life in the soil. You know, the old organic adage is feed the soil, not the plant. And most organic farmers would have considered themselves livestock farmers. And the livestock is the incredible amount of life living under our feet, much more than there is above ground.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're talking about livestock. You're talking about what's in the ground and microbes, the living organisms.
That's right. That's right. Microbes and you know, animals that live in the soil too, insects, all kinds of things. The biomass in a fertile soil is much greater below ground than above ground, which is just kind of an amazing thing because being above ground, we think of that as being what's happening. So yes, of course, good organic farmer wants to get good healthy crops and good yields, but they do that by managing that life in the soil. And we can talk about it if you want, about why that makes them taste different, and I think why the nutrition is different. But that has always been the foundation of organic farming. In the last 7 years, there has been a revolution taking place, a very quiet revolution, where some large-scale hydroponic producers realized that they could start to bend the rules for the USDA National Organic Program and be able to certify hydroponic production as organic. And as a result, the landscape is changing fairly dramatically about what you can buy and who grew it.
Hmm. Well, now, one more thing about the soil. A greenhouse in the Arizona desert is going to be on different soil than a greenhouse in Vermont. So is there going to be a difference in the fruit or the vegetables as a result of them being planted in those different soils?
I think there will even be a difference between Vermont and Massachusetts. You know, in the wine industry, that's called terroir, which is that the differences in the soil produce a wine that tastes different. And they're, you know, everyone's quite aware of that the nutritional makeup of the food is different based on the kind of soil it's growing in. So, yes, of course, Arizona is going to be different from Vermont. And it might be better, it might be worse. But an organic grower in either place would still have the same goal, which is to build up the life in the soil to the point where the plant was deriving its nutrition, through different mechanisms from dumping on plant available nutrients.
You know, I'm familiar with a couple of researchers, a couple of doctors that have indicated that there's better nutrition and you get more protection for the body from foods that are coming from healthy soils. Why do you believe that is the case? And are you convinced from what you've seen and heard about research that's taken place that there's enough to support that premise scientifically?
I think that, you know, this is one of those great things, Roger, where no matter what your point of view is on this and apparently every other debate in the public arena these days, everyone claims that theirs is science-based. But I think that the vast majority of work in the fields of soil microbiology and human nutrition in the last 70 years have supported this perspective. One friend of mine who's a researcher said the amazing thing is the degree to which science has validated the observations of Sir Albert Howard, who was the probably founder of the modern organic movement back in England in the 1930s. His work and work of people who followed him, and of course one of his followers was J.I. Rodale, who brought it to the United States through the Rodale Center and Organic Gardening Magazine. But in England, it's a worldwide movement. I get letters from farmers in Australia and New Zealand and South Africa and Brazil, and they're all talking about the same issue. Only in America is it considered okay to call hydroponic production organic. In the EU, they just finalized a new rule to make it absolutely clear that that cannot be permitted. The United States is the outlier here, kind of the rebels. And I would say that in the organic farming community in the United States, there's not much debate about this. The debate is rather a policy debate with the National Organic Program. Unfortunately, it's not really a debate. It's more a matter of lobbyists being quite successful at moving the USDA and some powerful people in Congress to support them.
There was a point of debate as to whether or not hydroponics in particular would continue to be able to be certified organic. And Dave, if I got this right, that discussion took place and the USDA made a decision that, yeah, hydroponics can also be certifiably organic, even if they're not soil-based.
So there's the National Organic Program, and they make these decisions, and they are advised by the National Organic Standards Board. We'll just call it the NOSB. And it's an advisory board. It's considered quite an honor to be selected to serve on that. People are selected by the Secretary of Agriculture. There's 15 people, and they're meant to represent a broad coalition of organic supporters. And in 2010, they had been asked before to make a recommendation about the hydroponic issue. There was very little hydroponic production at being certified, but they were asked to clarify this. Let's put this issue to bed once and for all. And they studied it for a couple of years, and they got a lot of comments from the public, and they debated it, and they passed, I think it was 14-1, a recommendation that hydroponics should not be permitted to be called organic by the National Organic Program. So as one person who served on the board at that time said, it was a beautiful example of the system working just as it should. There was real consideration. They looked at the science, they listened to the people, and they made a strong recommendation. And that recommendation was ignored by the USDA. A few years later, what happened is that some of these big players came in, big. One of them is the biggest berry company in the world, Driscoll's, and another is a company that now dominates the American fresh tomato market, Wholesome Harvest. And they were quietly getting a lot of products certified. Nobody knew about it. And the USDA was ignoring the issue. So there were no standards about hydroponics being allowed. They just were getting certified. And the only official recommendation was that they shouldn't be. I stumbled into this about 5 years ago, when I saw a lot of these tomatoes showing up in the market, And I started to write some letters. And then we started with my friend Davey Miskell and some others. We started to put out petitions because we thought this was just an oversight, that somebody hadn't noticed what was going on. And unfortunately, it turned out to be much worse than that. I think that people in the USGA were quite aware of what was going on, and it was just everyone was keeping it quiet. So as we got into this, we discovered that we were up against pretty major players, which I didn't realize at first. I served on a task force, a USGA task force, that was convened for further study. The task force was initially selected as only hydroponic proponents, but that shifted with a public outcry. And so they put five soil proponents on as well. And the task force came up with two recommendations. One was hydroponics is wonderful, and the other is hydroponics should not be called organic. And there was more debate. You know, it's all this regulatory stuff. And in the end, the Citizens Advisory Board was unable to pass a more clear recommendation, a stronger recommendation to prohibit hydroponics. And the USDA pretty much immediately said, we're allowing hydroponics. And that's where we're at. So I don't know exactly how big the sales are. The hydroponic industry themselves claims it to be $1 billion a year. And if that's not true, it certainly will be soon. And it will go beyond that, I'm sure.
Now, the USDA decision, that was that made within, 2018 or the end of 2017?
I think it was probably the beginning of 2018.
Right.
And it was, January or something.
So that, let me kind of jump ahead, and then you can fill in the blanks here for me, because that was something that you and others thought was a shortcoming of the current certified organic program as approved by the USDA. And while you were at it, other shortcomings were observed that involved livestock care and other things. And then I'm going to jump way ahead. And that somehow led to the establishment of another project called the Real Organic Project, which by name suggests that the one that exists right now is not really organic. And I'm sure it goes back to things like the definition of the soil-based importance and some things, too, on animal care. Explain that. I mean, did I get that kind of right? That was a very much of a shortcut observation, but there was frustration.
No, that was good, Roger. In the process of basically debating about the hydroponic issue, I did indeed discover that there were other serious problems with the National Organic Program. And one of them is what they call the CAFO problem. CAFO is a CAFO. It stands for a concentrated animal feeding operation. It's a feedlot. And, you know, it's a factory farm. And it turns out that a lot of that is getting certified right now. I think probably 75 to 80% of the eggs and poultry that are certified organic come from CAFOs, maybe half the milk. These are pretty major issues. I don't think that anybody in the consuming world believes that these things are organic. That's not what they're going and buying organic for. Likewise with the hydroponic, people are not expecting when they buy organic berries that they were grown in a little pot of coconut husks and being fed a drip of nutrients. The third thing that we discovered is that there's a lot of fraudulently certified grain being imported. All these issues have been covered in the Washington Post, did a series of exposés.
We actually did an interview with the Washington Post at one stage. We had a podcast about what they were discovering.
Oh, did you? Well, that's with Peter Wariski.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's great. He's one of the great investigative journalists who's really looked at this, and I really respect his work. the vast majority of the farms certified organic in America by the USDA are really organic, right? Probably 90% are real organic. And that's where it is complicated to start throwing our fists around and saying, well, we shouldn't trust the USDA. I think it's true that we can't trust the organic seal at this point. Nonetheless, I always buy organic in the store, and I will continue to, because it's the best I've got to go on right now. And I know that a great deal of the food is really organic. The problem is that the USDA has failed at their mission, which was to provide a program with integrity and transparency. And a great deal of food really is organic and is deserving of our support. And it's the food we want to be eating. And some of it isn't. And we can no longer rely on just trusting the USDA seal in order to make that choice. That's the dilemma that we have. And the other dilemma that has come up to me that's so clear is that the process is pretty compromised right now. Of just one example is the animal welfare reform rules that went through the Citizens Advisory Board and were approved by the National Organic Program and were approved by the USDA. And on the first day of Trump's administration, they pulled those. They were only approved the day before by Obama's departing USDA, finally got around to approving them. And the first day of Trump's administration, they pulled them. And they were since thrown out due to a lot of political pressure coming from conventional meat lobbies saying, we don't want the USDA to even mention the words animal welfare, and certainly not to regulate them.
You and others were seeing the shortcomings and the problem with the system and what seems to be these kind of arbitrary decisions that have come up, and came to a consensus that there ought to be a higher standard. And if you can't do it from the government, that you could come together and create a project that has a higher standards addressing what you felt were the shortcomings in the certified organic program?
Yes. Yes. That's the purpose of the Real Organic Project. And it's not just a labeling program. The goal of the Real Organic Project is educational and transformational. So we want to have conversations about just the things we're discussing here. It's my belief that it's not enough to create a new label. What we can do is to have conversations to bring all of us into greater biological literacy and become more fluent in our understanding of the biological world that we live in and what the impacts are of our decisions. And that is the ultimate goal of the Real Organic Project. And I think that one of the things that has a little bit haunted the organic movement is that once the USDA took over certification, to some degree, that mission of education got not set aside, but diminished. And labeling became a major focus. Certainly, that was the focus of the National Organic Program. And as a result of that, it became about branding. and as we succeeded, the sharks came in. There was blood in the water. There was money to be made. There was a market. And that's wonderful that there's a market. It's wonderful that people care enough about what they're eating and about how the environment is affected by how that food is grown, that they're willing to actually spend more money in the marketplace in order to do the right thing. The problem is that now we're in a food fight. We're in a fight to keep some transparency in labeling so people can understand what it is they're supporting. And I think ultimately it's not going to be enough just to have a label that says real organic or whatever our label might be called. People are going to need to be a little bit more involved in how their food is grown. Even if they live in the city, David Bronner said, you know, we're all farmers, and for some people, their farm is their plate, and their pitchfork is their fork. And by what they decide to put on their plate, they affect how agriculture is conducted in the world. And I believe that's true.
So have you put together a set of goals or guidelines that cross all kinds of agriculture production that is what you are calling real organic?
Yeah, Roger. We had a meeting of our standards board, the Real Organic Standards Board, which was 15 people from around the country. A number of them were former members of the National Organic Standards Board. It was just a very eminent group, very well qualified. We all desperately wish that that was the makeup of the board that the Secretary of Agriculture has chosen, and it is not. But they came together in Vermont in March, and they did, after months of work leading up to that, they did pass 7 simple standards. And this is an add-on label, so all of that work of the National Organic Program, most of which is good. You know, the standards are not bad. There's 1 or 2 standards that are bad in the National Organic Program. The good standards aren't always enforced, and the bad standards are very bad, so they make enormous loopholes. So we addressed that. And our standards are very simple, and basically they just ensure that the food must, the farmer must attend to building up and maintaining the fertility of the soil, which means building up and maintaining the life in the soil. And we believe that that will bring about the life in the food. We prohibited hydroponics. We prohibited CAFOs. The animals must go outside and be on pasture. Chickens must be outside. Cattle must be outside. These are very simple standards. And as I say, they're really the standards that were intended when the Organic Food Production Act passed, with the law that created the National Organic Program, which was a good law, and it was well written. And these are the standards. They've been discussed for years. Most of them have been recommended by the Organic Standards Board, the National Organic Standards Board. We're just trying to step beyond the regulatory gridlock that we're in, where the rules that we all believe in, we are not radicals in this sense. We are moderates. The radicals are redefining the word in order to make a buck. And we are just saying, no, we know what organic means.
So can people then, can the farmers then, can they just say, hey, I'm in, I believe in this, and I produce to these standards. I'm not only certified organic, but I'm a notch up. I'm the Real Organic Project.
We're actually going to have an on-site inspection, and it won't be every year, probably every 5 years, but the first year always. And an inspector will come and make sure that you're telling the truth. A lot of the things we're inspecting for are very obvious. If the consumers got to visit a 40-acre hydroponic tomato greenhouse, their head would spin and they would go, this is not organic. Or if they went to an Aurora Dairy, you know, 15,000 cow CAFO, their stomach would turn and they'd go, this is not what I meant by organic. And conversely, if they went to Butterworks Farm in Vermont and saw this beautiful farm with the cows on pasture, healthy cows that they can milk for many years, they would go, this is what I mean. As they say, I know it when I see it. And so there will be an actual inspection every 5 years. And on that inspection, we'll be making a short 3-minute film of every farm that we inspect. And that film will be posted on the website so that you can go and see for yourself what that farm looks like.
Let's just kind of wrap up with the consumer perspective, because I can just imagine people I know that really care about the food they eat. They don't eat exclusively organic, but they really care about knowing how the food is produced. I imagine their head is spinning right now when they're hearing our conversation. It's like there is so much to look after and so many claims that are on labels right now. But if a consumer cares and they want to keep an eye out for products that are this step higher, that fill in the gaps of where you think the weaknesses are, will there be labeling? Will there be guidelines to identify that, you know, that farm product?
Yes, Roger. So this year we're going to have a pilot program, and we're only going to inspect 50 farms because we need to get our act together. We're trying something new. You know, the USDA has been running inspection for a long time. So these will be add-on inspections. We'll do 50 farms this year. Next year will be much more widespread, and I honestly don't know what the label is going to be called yet. We've already been threatened with lawsuits. Let's just say not everybody wants transparency. So we'll have to work that out. To keep up with it, people can go to realorganicproject.org and stay up with the news, become a member. That would be fantastic. If they can afford it, make a contribution. We're trying to make this so it's affordable for the farmers. We don't want to have another weight on their back. People have been very generous so far. You know, there are only, whatever, 10,000 farmers, 15,000 organic farmers in America, farms, but there are millions of people who care and want to buy that food. And we need those millions of people to support this. One thing I would say, when you talk about confusion, I would say if people aren't confused about how their food is being grown right now, then they're not paying attention. Mm-hmm. And they should be paying attention. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for their health, for all of our health. And it's a big deal for the climate. I'm firmly convinced that how we farm dramatically affects the climate, and there are real possibilities for not only carbon sequestration, but for changing the water cycle and cooling the planet if we can farm in a good way, which would be in the way that real organic, traditional organic farms. So,
well, in the interim, I think that while you're heading on this journey and this project is moving the direction you've described, consumers should continue to be curious about where their food came from and how it's grown, and no matter where they're sourcing their food, you know, try to look behind the label and talk to the people that are supplying them, and not just in the farmer's market, other restaurants too. You know, try to know Absolutely. The story about how that food's grown.
Well, one of the educational campaigns of the Real Organic Project is our Just Ask campaign. And we're urging them to go into their stores and just ask, are these organic tomatoes, hydroponic? Are these organic eggs grown in a CAFO? And I can promise you that most people who work in the stores won't know. But if 50 people go into every store and ask, they will find out. And if they go into every store and ask, actually, we will win in a week. The world will change. So all of us have tremendous power if we could only act together. And until then, we can act individually and bring about the change that we can in the little part of the world that we touch.
Well, I tell you what, I really respect the journey that you're on and the leadership that you're putting into this. I know all of you have other things to do running your own farm and trying to step up and spend time on committees and conference calls, and it's got to be a labor of love, and I appreciate what you're doing, and I think the people that are enjoying literally the fruits of your efforts appreciate as well. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk, Dave.
All right, Roger. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.